Well, that's the thing
It's
that
called The
kept
Hanging
him.
in Prison. It's rather a nice one, isn't it?
If you're very depressed, you do your tins. You brighten them up a bit, or you dust the wall, or you. It's a kind of thing that you can't explain how it is. You see, in the Russian book, he falls back on activity. It's a research station, and they're all very active. But if all these Russians were shut up for 2 years, I mean, they weren't allowed to speak for 2 years. I don't know how they would live.
Did you tell me before that one of the COs you knew died in prison?
Yes, we were talking about it. We were talking about it the other day. It's an extraordinary thing. Claire and I used to visit the Tolstoy's house nearby there lived a chap in a van. We didn't know him at the beginning, but we got to know him after a time. And he was a professor at Cambridge who'd given up his professorship.
His name was Mann.
Mann, yeah. Given up his professorship to do wonderful woodwork. He just loved the use of his hands rather than the brain. Well, one day he came in to us. We were in a large room there, and he came in to us, and he said, "I had a very strange dream, and I must tell it to you. I must tell it to somebody. That there was a CO in a prison, and he had gone mad, and he started shouting in his cell, and the warders tried to get in, but he had put his table and all the other furniture against the door, and the warders banged and shouted at him and couldn't get in. Ultimately, when they got in, their anger was so violent that they more or less put this fellow to death with whacks and hits and that. So it was interesting because that's exactly what happened at Bedford. So we said to him, "How did you know of this?" He said, I know nothing about, I have no communication with this chap Roberts, his name was Roberts, no communication of any kind. It just came to me as such, it just came to me. I said, "Well, as far as I know, every word you've said is the actual truth. I've got it described here, as a matter of fact, that's before we knew this fellow." And So
this was... What sort of man was this Robert?
Oh, very, I was going to say a very quiet chap, but that's more or less a compulsory existence there. But he was a man who kept to himself, and I should think he had an obsessive mind. He was obviously thinking of one thing only. I remember the only conversation I had with him was rather in a way what seemed to us at that age obscene. I once asked him what he thinks about most of all. So he said, pubic hair. So I knew the type. Well, I begged of the warders then. I said that chap needs looking after because you must pity him rather than. Still, it had the best of him and he started shouting. Well, that was an actual experience, and this fellow told it to us through spiritual communication. He told us it was in great detail, didn't he? Or yes. Didn't he say that his wife told him the story,
no,
Claire?
No. One day we went on a holiday at somewhere near Washington. I did some painting there. And it was a friend who was a Catholic, and we seemed to cut across every religion. And her father died and left her a huge sum of money, and she bought 7 acres of ground, and she thought that she would give it to other people, share the whole thing. So whoever wanted to come there, there was only one house, two little cottages. One cottage I had, she let for us for a holiday, a month's holiday there, and one where she lived. But then there was another man, a Presbyterian priest, who built himself a little place. She allowed people to build on it. She made no concession, no rules whatever. People wanted to come and live there, they lived there, whether in a hut or in a tent. We had a wonderful experience there. And she wanted us to stay in one of the cottages for a holiday. And I had, my kiddies were very young then. We only had one room down below and one room upstairs, a bedroom. And now why was I telling, oh yes, one day Mr. Mann came in and said, I hear that you're here. What is her name? Veronica, what was her name? Vera. Vera tells me that you're here. So I thought I'd come and see you. So he came, and he was living in a cart. He'd moved from Bournemouth to there. He had a cart which he turned into a dwelling by a circular roof and covered with canvases.
Yes.
And he slept in it and had his books there. And he brought me the next day, there was a lot of writing. His wife, who was also Claire, I think that's why he came to me, had died years ago, and that's why he gave up his professorship. And she used to come to him at night in sleep, or when he was awake, she'd come. He had a little lamp, a little tiny lamp, oil lamp, and she'd come to him, and he wrote down all of it. He brought me this exercise book full of things which she communicated to
and
him.
That's where he heard how he learnt the story of the man who died in prison.
Yes. Oh, I think he told that to you, didn't he?
That's before. Then.
That was a
that before.
Yes.
That was
but
about.
After that, he came to me and gave me the book.
I'm not sure that he knew that we had that experience, Claire. I don't quite remember whether he knew of us as COs.
No, he didn't know anything about
no,
us.
No, I don't think no. so.
He just said that he had this dream,
yes.
and it puzzled him why he should have this dream. He was an important professor. He'd given that up, and he lived a very simple, hard life. did his own little meals and everything.
Oh, he worked under one of the most beautiful, what is his name, historic cabinet makers, the one who, whom William Morris.
Oh, he was an exceedingly nice man.
Oh, lovely. As cleaner, you see, I had the confidence of the warders, or most of them, anyhow.
Why did they make you cleaner?
Why did they make me cleaner? I don't suppose. Well, I wasn't very good at sewing, you know. I wasn't a very good at sewing mail bags, and I wasn't a naturally obedient kind of convict. I lived my life there. I don't know if I give you that impression very much as I live it here. I treated them as fellow humans.
As cleaner, were you the so-called red band man?
No, you have three stripes. I think the governor, who rather liked Claire used to come, said, "Why is your husband here?" And then they conspired together, I think, to make me a cleaner so I can get round, and I was a kind of chaplain in a way. They told me everything and confided in me, the convicts as well. I mean, we weren't separated. I mean, on the other side, the one was a Catholic, the other chap on the other side was a tramp. I've got a poem about him too here, tramp. And they made me so that I didn't have to do mail bags all day. And they felt I could, I suppose, appease the various temperaments there by giving here and there a little extra food, you know. Cleaner's not the only person. I had to clear out their excretion and all that, but that wasn't the only job. You supply food, and I was able to give certain people double portions, other people a little more than that, something I could get. I was able to do that, and it made it a rather pleasant place.
What effect did it have on you? You had the opportunity to know a lot more about the men since they were talking to you,
yes,
than you would have done if you'd been alone in your cell all the time.
Yes.
Was that helpful to you, or was it depressing?
Well, it's difficult to answer. It was both. It was depressing because you saw that if they told you a thing, and even if you knew the solution to it, they would have to go through their years of slow torment, you know, all the time, and there'd be no solution to their problem. Take this chap Clark. He had five or six children and no money, and he would tell me that. What could I do? I couldn't give him money, and I couldn't meet his wife and tell her that things would be all right, because I didn't believe that things would be all right. I never cheered them with false hopes, because I had no hope at all ever at that place. I didn't see the war ending at all. I thought it had come as a way of life, more or less. It seemed like it, the way people were accepting war. And I foresaw results which have come about. I'm not a prophetic kind of person. I think it's obvious to all people who thought about it, about terrible economic havoc that would come. They had no conception of, no idea as to what to do after the war, with the people coming back and Well, you know all about it better than I do from meeting your people, but the economic depression at that time was much worse than it is now, because now you cushioned the whole thing nicely. You introduce a decimal system so that you can pay less by paying more. You pay a penny now, which is, that was a Callahan's idea, but I didn't see any hope, so I couldn't give them any hope. All I could feel was, in a way, a prayer, I suppose you'd call it. I used to just sit in silence thinking of them all the time, and then meeting them and being only too glad to see them in the face, you know. You're alive still. This is a new day. You're still alive. Well, cheer up, old chap. You'll have more days yet. The weather had a lot to help us, too. I mean, a sunny day made all that difference.